Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Derek and I are live at Assembly Food Hall across the street from Bridgestone Arena, where the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament is underway. And the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament will start next week. Selection Sunday, of course, coming up this weekend. And that will include Tennessee State University qualifying for the tournament for the first time since 1994. And to discuss that with us, let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in TSU head men's basketball coach Nolan Smith. Now, Nolan, I am I am required by law to tell you that I was born in Durham, North Carolina. I am a lifelong Duke fan. You're my guy. Yep. I'm thrilled for you. I just have to put that out there. My co-host would not let me hear the end of it if I did not mention that right off the top.
I'm glad we're getting this out of the way early.
I appreciate you. Yes, sir.
So a huge accomplishment in your first year, Nolan, again, making the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1994. You are no stranger to the NCAA tournament, but your players are. So how are you preparing them for what's coming next week?
Just getting them mentally ready, giving them a message that we are going to be ready to go no matter who we play, and we're going to go into this tournament and play our game and be us. And, you know, just trying to give them as much confidence as possible. We are a very confident group as is, so we got to attack the tournament like it's just another game.
What is the accomplishment you're most proud of this season? I have to imagine winning the OVC is at the top, but besides that, just the entire journey of this season in your first year with the Tigers, what are you most proud of?
I think just the journey. The journey is always so rewarding when you go through the ups and downs, when you take a couple losses that maybe you didn't need, but you know the basketball journey tells you that you didn't need it. And our guys responded every time that we took a loss that we you know, it just came at a time where we needed it for whatever reason. And our guys responded. They were resilient. They showed that they could battle through adversity, whether it was a four-game loss or whatever it was, our guys responded.
I know that you are preparing to play whichever team the selection committee tosses your way next weekend. But we do know, Nolan, that the selection committee loves a good storyline. So I'm not ruling out the possibility that your team could go up against your alma mater and your former teammate John Shire in the first round of the tournament. What would that mean for you if you went head-to-head with John in the first round of the tournament?
It would be a battle. It would be exciting to play against my school, and just ultimately it would just be a battle. Got to go against my guy John and Chris Carwell and Tyler Thorne on that side. But thankfully, I believe that obviously we're going to be much deserving of a higher seed than that. So I don't think we'll have to see that beast from the Duke Blue Devils. I think we'll be hopefully a 15 or possibly a 14 seed.
We'll talk with Nolan Smith, head at basketball coach at TSU, Tennessee State University. Now, Coach, what were your goals? Because obviously coming into the season, you want to win an OVC title. You guys won that. But what were your goals sort of in the season that you wanted to accomplish? And did you accomplish those goals?
Absolutely. You know, we came in with high expectations, high goals, and to this point, we've been able to get every single one of them. And the guys and my staff have done an amazing job just working with these guys, developing them, getting them in the right mindset to win. And these guys have just really bought into that. And, you know, we have a group of winners that are hungry and hungry for more.
Now, you started out at Duke as a player, but then as an assistant. You've been to Memphis, you've been to Louisville, now you're here at TSU. What did those three places that you spent being an assistant, what did those three places teach you that have made you successful here with the Tigers?
I think just preparation. The preparation that it takes to prepare every single day with the practice plans, with what you do off the court, how you build your group up. You know, I think those are the biggest key lessons from Coach K, Penny, and all the guys that have been able to be around. You know, just preparing for victory, preparing to just get better every single day.
Talking to Nolan Smith, the head coach of the TSU Tigers. They are NCAA tourney bound. They beat Morehead State in the final, 93-67. And, Coach, I got to ask you, you guys are a solid three-point shooting team throughout the season, but yep, 16 yep. for 26 from three in the championship game where everything's on the line, that is unbelievable. As you watch that unfold, what is that feeling like? Is that just contagious when guys start getting hot? It just seemed like it was feeding itself.
It's definitely contagious, you know. And for us, like you said, we don't want to fall in love with the three. But when you're hitting like that, then, you know, continue to shoot them with confidence. And that's what our guys were out there doing.
So, I mean, once you built the lead, I mean, did the guys even surprise themselves a little bit? I mean, anybody, 16 threes is off the charts. You know, if you hit 10 or 12, that's a great day.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's big time. Obviously, we have guys that are shot capable, and, you know, they went out there and made shots. And, you know, hopefully this long layover with the OVC tournament being when it is, hopefully it doesn't cool us down. But, you know, we stay confident. So our guys are going to go out there and hopefully shoot the way we just shot. Thank you.
Well, we've talked to a lot of coaches from the OVC over the years. You guys have the conference tournament early. You know, some of the other leagues will go early, and you got this interesting challenge. You got to keep your team sharp for a week. So each coach has got their own theory. So how have you tried to go about it? Who have you maybe checked in with on the best way to do this to stay sharp?
I mean, definitely Coach K. Definitely Coach K. I've reached out to him. Reached out to Jeff Capel, who's been at the mid-major level that, you know, possibly might not have had this long of a layover. Coach Kevin Keats, those are probably the main guys I spoke with just to try to see how we prepare and how we get ready with this layoff.
So did you give them a couple days off? So are you going to do some live scrimmages? Like, what did you decide?
No, we definitely took a couple days off, and then we came back. It was individual work and skill development and just working on our games.
What is your give me your favorite part of the Gentry Center. I've been some games over the years. I have always enjoyed – it's unlike any other place. The pep band is so awesome. So what's been your experience watching that all year long?
Man, it's been a good crowd, good energy. Just love – definitely love playing in the Gentry Center. It's really good energy, you know, and as the season's gone on, the crowds have grown, the excitement's grown, and – you know, it's been really good. We have really good home games.
Coach Nolan Smith is with us. And you know, Coach, every year you experience this as an assistant, I'm sure, that the turnover is so common now with NIL and all of that. So when you got to TSU and you tried to figure out how you're going to set the culture, who's staying, who's coming in, all of that, what were your expectations and what was the key to building this roster?
Oh, well, thankfully, some of the guys were already here. Aaron Okuma, Travis Hunter, you know, they were already a part of this thing. So, in reality, bringing in Dante Harris was a huge piece, a main piece that we had to get. And, you know, he's came in and did what he needed to do to help us be successful as a leader and a proven winner.
TSU head men's basketball coach Nolan Smith has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Nolan, is TSU doing anything special for Selection Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. The Gentry Center is going to be packed. We're going to have a nice celebration for the selection show. And you know, it's been 32 years, so excited for everybody to come in and enjoy it. Happy for my players to enjoy it. It should be a good afternoon, evening.
Well, enjoy Selection Sunday and good luck in the NCAA men's basketball tournament.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on.
One piece of Titans breaking news during our conversation with Nolan Smith from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. Former Titan center Corey Levin is signing with the Atlanta Falcons on a one-year deal per source, reunites with OL coach Bill Callahan, who was with him at Tennessee last year. Levin spent 6 years with the Titans. So Corey Levin out the door as well. And we were talking about the biggest concerns. Andrew on our text line feels like we missed the biggest concern, which is the offensive line. And now with Corey Levin out the door, Andrew says the offensive line is the biggest concern. If the defense is suspect again, it can be fixed. If Cam is not protected, could get injured, won't get true idea of how he looks with consistent protection. It will be a disaster for Borgonzi and the franchise. Left tackle who is inconsistent, no true center, and no right guard. That's a red flag. So Corey Levin, Willie, out the door, headed to Atlanta.
Yeah, I was curious about him. I think the message was out there with both Chig and Corey Levin that they were going to move in a different direction with the new offense and everything. So now you wonder what they've got up their sleeve at center.
Well, Paul Kaharsky reported on his site, speaking of the right guard, he reported on his site yesterday that the Titans are still talking with Kevin Zeitler on returning after last season. And Zeitler, I thought, was solid at right guard last season. But I think for the Titans' sake, Derek, center continues to be an issue because I do think that there were probably some people who thought, hey, maybe give Corey Levin a shot at center. It'll probably be Austin Schlottman at this point, who has not been a consistent starter in the NFL over 7 years, if I recall correctly. You absolutely need to bring back Zeitler to shore up that offensive line.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, why did they choose to part ways? Why did they choose not to sign Corey Levin back? Again, you parted ways with Cushenberry. You didn't have a center, in place when you released him, but then you went out and got a guy that didn't play last year, if I'm correct.
Volson, the offensive lineman they signed, missed all of last season with an injury.
So you get a guy that's a tweener, a guard, but he can play center. The texter is right. I don't even know why, we didn't think about it. Maybe because it's been a problem for so long, We just kind of overlooked it. But the texter is right, You went out and you cut your starting center. You didn't re-sign another center that played for you last year. And you went out and got a guy that center isn't his true position, and he didn't play any of last year.
So, Willie, right now I'm looking at the Titans offensive line, and I'm projecting that from left to right, Dan Moore, Peter Skoronski, Austin Schlottman, Cordell Volson, and J.C. Latham. That's your offensive line. That is worse on paper than last year's offensive line with Lloyd Cushenberry at center and Kevin Zeitler at right guard.
Well, the good thing is they don't play the old USFL schedule starting in March, right? They've got some time to figure this out. I'm sure they have a plan. I don't think Schlottman is projected to be a starter. I think he's probably Levin from last year, a utility guy that could play center or guard as a backup. I'm always curious, there's probably going to be some guys who get cut June 1st, and you might have some other guys fall through the cracks, and you could address it after the draft. Maybe they got some guys. I mean, according to Trevor Maddich yesterday, he doesn't think it's a draft where there's obvious plug-and-play centers, which sometimes you can get as rookies. The great example is Kevin Long. Way back in the day when Derek was playing, rookie center, seventh-round pick. They go to the Super Bowl with him in there with all those veterans around him. But I'm sure they've got something in mind.
One texter says, why did the Titans cut Lloyd Cushenberry with no freaking plan?
They
have a plan.
That's the question. They haven't fulfilled that plan
yet. I know this is a triggering question for you, Willie, but what's the plan? What's the plan, Willie?
Well, where's Cushenberry, by the way?
Well, he didn't pass the physical, so
He hasn't signed anywhere, I don't believe.
Anywhere.
Yep. I mean, is he sitting out there in the middle of the summer?
Or did he pass his physical when they just cut him? Did he pass the physical? I think he did.
No, he cut. They cut him.
Yeah, with a failed physical designation, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's what it was. That's what it was, okay.
So, I mean, he's out there.
Bring back cheaper.
Perhaps.
They got cheaper, but with a guy that didn't play last year.
No, I'm saying, what if Cushenberry?
What if they brought back Cushenberry at a reduced price?
Okay. Passes the physical, and you can get him on a new deal that's not as expensive. These are all possibilities.
I mean, it's a possibility, obviously, because he hadn't signed with anyone else, and I don't think anyone else is going to sign him until he's fully healthy. But yeah, I mean, this could be a way that the Titans, you know, can get him at a reduced salary. You know, it's kind of what the Baltimore Ravens did in a sense. You know, hey, listen, your damage good. We're gonna cut you, but we'll bring you back at a much cheaper price. I'm guaranteeing you, if they could have got Max Crosby for a fourth round draft pick, Baltimore Ravens would have took him.
615-737-1025, an SEC tournament scoreboard update, which are driven, by the way, by Toyota. Be listening for updates throughout the day. Toyota, let's go places. Auburn is about to win against Mississippi State, 77-61, as the clock winds down across the street at Bridgestone Arena. So as Willie mentioned, Auburn, one of those bubble teams, will live to fight on another day. The Tigers will take on the Vols tomorrow in the second game of the second round at Bridgestone Arena. Earlier today, Kentucky defeated LSU, so Kentucky advances to take on Missouri. By the way, Vanderbilt has the double bye as the fourth seed in the tournament. Vanderbilt will take on the winner of Tennessee and Auburn on Friday afternoon, a 2:30 p.m. Central tip-off Friday afternoon across the street at Bridgestone Arena. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, speaking of the usual tenants at Bridgestone Arena, the Nashville Predators with a huge win last night, keeping their faint playoff hopes alive. We'll break that down coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek and I are live at Assembly Food Hall downtown. David James is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
O'Reilly wins the draw. Marchessault back to Ufko, right point. Ufko makes a move, cuts to the net. Ufko scores! Ryan Ufko scores his first NHL goal, and it's a highlight reel goal in the best league in the world!
Max Herz, a little excited, just a little excited.
I like his enthusiasm.
About Ryan Ufko's first career NHL goal, the game-winning goal for the Nashville Predators last night. They win a big game, 4-2 in Seattle against the Kraken. And Willie, it looked like the game was going to get away from the Predators early. They were down 2-0 at the end of one. The Kraken outshot the Predators 19-7. In the first period. But as we've talked about with the moves the Predators made at the trade deadline, it's an opportunity to play the kids, and the kids made a difference in the second period. Fedor Svechkov had a primary assist on Tyson Jost's goal. Reed Schaefer scored on an assist from Matt Wood. And then Ryan Ufko, as you just heard Max describe, scored the game-winning goal in impressive fashion, carving through the Kraken defense. A big, big win for the Predators, Willie, who are now 1 point behind the Kraken for the final wild card spot in the Western Conference.
1 point out with 18 to play, that is something that I think, given the fact that the Predators are 3-3-1 since the Olympic break, I did not think 3-3-1 would have them getting closer to the playoff line than further away. So it's remarkable that they haven't had to win five in a row to be 1 point back. So it's getting more realistic, I think, each passing day. I think if you polled the players after they lost to Columbus last Tuesday, they would have said, oh, man, we're selling. This is going to get away fast. But, you know, after, I think, moping around for a day or so, then they beat Boston. Then they stood pat, didn't trade anybody else. I think they've kind of looked around and said, hey, this thing's still gettable. There's no reason that they can't play with the the other teams that are involved here, so why not believe that you can still do it? Now, it's really a game of there's not enough room, right? There's four teams basically for one spot. And so it's going to be a scoreboard-watching race, and they're going to have to probably win 10 or 11 of the last 18 to get through that pack of teams. But it was a great win last night. It was one that they had to have, I think, to set the tone of this road trip, which is make or break. And like you said, Adam, the most exciting part probably was not only that they came back, but it was the young guys that really led the charge.
The Predators, as of this morning, depending on which website you like to use, the odds are still against them analytically. MoneyPuck.com has the Predators at 28.1% to make the playoffs. SportLogic at 21%. The Athletic, unkind, just 11% for the Predators to make the playoffs. I don't know how all of these algorithms work, but either way, although the Predators are right there, it's still going to be tough for them to make the playoffs. As Willie said, it's probably going to take 10, 11 wins over the course of the final month of the season to get in there.
But that's not unrealistic, and there's a lot of hit. I don't know how they, like you said, Adam, I don't know how they calculate these things, and they change a lot on a day-to-day basis. So that really doesn't matter to me. To me, the key thing to focus on is how many of these games they have remaining are head-to-head with the other teams in this mix.
Yes, that is very true. And I know that there are probably a lot of Predators fans out there right now listening who see this playoff chase as sort of found money, so to speak. The Predators were not supposed to make the playoffs this season. The last week of November, they were at the bottom of the standings, and they've battled back to get back in this race. And I see that perspective. I would argue that there is a lot of pressure on the Predators to make the playoffs to justify what they did, and more specifically didn't do, at the trade deadline. Friend of the station, Greg Brzezinski on ESPN.com, wrote a story today judging overreactions to the NHL trade deadline. And one of his overreactions, quote-unquote, was the Predators dramatically botched the deadline. And his verdict was overreaction with a caveat. And here is what Greg wrote, quote, Trott said he got, quote-unquote, really good offers for Ryan O'Reilly and Steven Stamkos, but ultimately decided to keep them around because Nashville is still vying for the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. The Predators have just over an 18% chance of making the cut, which is not exactly comforting, but also not nothing. Therein lies the caveat. If Trotz had come out and said O'Reilly, Stamkos, and Jonathan Marchessault weren't moved because no one would meet their terms or because of trade protection, that's one thing. To not move them because the Predators have an 18% chance of earning the right to get swept by Colorado, that's another. Greg mentions the decision not to trade Eric Halla. Then he continues. O'Reilly will give you. Stamkos, sure. But choosing long-shot playoff contention over trading a journeyman center in a favorable market, that's nuts. So overall, it's okay that none of the big three moved. There's always the summer. It's the justification that makes us wince, end quote.
Willie, but don't you think that, listen, if he would have gotten something that, meaning Barry, that he just couldn't refuse, then he would have made the move, because we've heard him say over and over again, he's going to do what's best for the organization. I'm not sure if the lack of movement with those guys, you know, automatically signaled that, oh, we're making this playoff push. Would they love to make the playoffs? Absolutely. Who wouldn't? But I don't think it was solely, well, we're not going to trade these guys because we're trying to make a push. I mean, he didn't get what he felt his players deserved in regards to compensation back, and he decided to, hey, just stick with them and start and let some of these young guys play.
And Willie, before you respond, I understand Derek's point of view. Here's my argument as to why I think there is pressure on the Predators to make the playoffs, despite the fact that when you lay out what I laid out before, the fact that nobody expected them to make the playoffs in the preseason. They were the worst team in the league around Thanksgiving. Hey, if they make the playoffs, as I said, it's found money. Mm-hmm. But I do think that in order to justify what the Predators did at the trade deadline, I think they do have to make the playoffs. Whether if they get in and they lose in the first round, that's what I would expect to happen. But I do think because Trotz mentioned it was a balancing act, mm-hmm. he's trying to serve two masters, all of those things. I think in order for fans who are maybe on the fence about what the Predators did to accept what they did, I do think they have to make the playoffs.
I think that is not listening to what Barry Trotz said. Let me ask you this. Your thing, Adam, all along has been play the kids. So I have a couple of questions for you. Are you – which of the kids right now are they not playing that you think should be in their lineup?
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head.
Right, because there aren't any. They're playing all of the prospects that they have that are ready to play at this level right now. So they're playing the kids. So if they're going to miss the playoffs or they're going to make the playoffs, a lot will have to do with how well these kids who are playing play for them. And so you're going to get some answers on those guys. So Eric Halla staying is to support. Now, there was a lot of debate and a lot of stuff that I think went on behind the scenes with Halla. I think we all assumed they were going to trade Halla. But ultimately, the bottom line is having him helped support Joachim Kemmel and Zach LaRue and all these guys, having another center that can support these guys. They don't have anybody else really that can play. The alternative would be to pick somebody off the waiver wire or use a minor league guy like Jake Lucchini to use. So that's the first thing. Are you suggesting, Adam, that they should have traded all these guys and so trade seven guys off your roster? Because basically you're saying at that point they should tank.
Well, you know me. I don't think that the playoffs should be the priority for the Predators this season.
No, it's not. So I think they've decided that if they make it, great. If they don't, we're starting the movement of playing the kids. But get back. So what did you think they should have done?
As I said on Friday, I really do think that they should have traded Ryan O'Reilly. I don't know if Barry Trotz received anything close to what his price was for O'Reilly. I wonder, and if I were on the show yesterday, I would have asked Barry Trotz this question. I'm wondering if the offers he had for O'Reilly were similar to the ones the Flames got for Nazem Kadri or the Blues got for Braden Schenn. First-round picks, mid-round picks, maybe second or third-round picks. I can't remember the particulars of both deals. Young players. To me...
What young players? Hold on. That's the question, though.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the prospect systems of the Calgary Flames and the St. Louis Blues, so I can't give you a specific name.
Name any top high-end prospect that got traded at the deadline.
Without doing my research, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Because there weren't any. There weren't any. That to me was my biggest criticism of those that say you should have traded O'Reilly. Because as you pointed out yourself, Adam, the average first-round pick you're going to get is about the 25th pick in the draft. So Kadri's deal involved a lot of money and bait and switch and retention. That was complicated. So I guess my question back to you is, do you think they could get a first-round pick for Ryan O'Reilly next year? Because Barry Trotz thinks that the next GM will have that option.
I think it's on the table, no doubt. I think if the Predators decided to trade O'Reilly at the deadline next year, I do think a first-round pick could be a part of that. We saw centers who are not as good as Ryan O'Reilly receive first round or conditional first round draft picks at the NHL trade deadline. But I think you would agree that the package probably will not be as robust as if they would have traded him before Friday because of the extra year on his deal.
I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. I guess my my assessment based on what happened around the league, and let's not leave out the fact that the Rangers had a really good center in Vincent Trocheck that they didn't feel like they got enough offers for, a good enough offer, so they kept him. So it's not like everybody traded everybody and you got this huge return. Guys like Philip Forsberg, prospects who are developed and ready to go, high-end prospects, teams are just holding on to those guys. If you could have gotten a guy like that for O'Reilly, that would have been the, quote, knock your socks off. And Barry Trotz, Chase used that term a bunch of times, so they had fun with that terminology with our chat yesterday with him. He said, my socks are still on. I didn't get the knock your socks off offer. And the other part that I think people aren't really putting themselves, they're looking at a piece of paper or they're talking away from everybody. If you have the human side of this, where I look you in the eye, Adam, and say, okay, you don't have a no-trade clause in your contract, but I respect you, you're a special person, you're a special player, so I'm going to give you that as part of the deal. And I will talk to you about, you know, the process here, and if there's something we can agree on, if there's something that comes my way that I can't ignore, and there's something that you would be open to, I'm going to let you in on that conversation. I saw Joe Rexroad in print, and I think you feel like this, say that he would have completely scrapped that and just done whatever he needed to do. Maybe you guys could do that. I could not do that to Ryan O'Reilly, right? Not a guy that, first of all, I gave my word. Even if I gave it to a jerk, I still couldn't go back on my word. But if I'm going to give my word to Ryan O'Reilly, I sure as heck am not going to turn my back on that and just go take the best offer. I don't know what the best offer was for O'Reilly, but I do know how special he is and how valuable he is. For better or worse, and this is where I think you could second guess and say he never should have given him that. To begin with,
I would argue
once he
that
gave my word, I cannot go back on my word.
I would argue that if you wanted to give Ryan O'Reilly control over his situation, negotiate the no movement clause into his contract.
But did he get him at a better? He got a sweetheart deal for Ryan O'Reilly. You would agree with that, right? It's one of the best contracts, dollar for dollar, bang for your buck, in the league right now. Fair?
I would say so, based on his play, especially this season.
Well, how about all three seasons? He said three great seasons.
I would agree with that as well. I'm saying especially this season. He's been fantastic this season. I'm not denying that, which is why I wanted them to strike while the iron was hot. That was my point on Friday.
We don't know, but you can't name a single high-end prospect that was traded for anybody in the league. Because there weren't any.
Well, if you give me the break, maybe I can find some for you. How about that?
Okay, look for one.
Okay, 615-737-1025. All right, this is what I want to know from Predators fans. Is there pressure on the team to make the playoffs because of what they did or didn't do at the trade deadline? 615-737-1025. The Predators, by winning last night in Seattle, are 1 point out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. That spot held by Seattle, which Nashville defeated last night. 615-737-1025. Join 1025 The Game as we broadcast live from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. tomorrow at Chiefs on Broadway for an SEC tournament watch party. Coverage of the SEC tournament on 1025 The Game is brought to you by Thompson Machinery, City Auto, and Maple Street Biscuit Company. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Derek and I are live at Assembly Food Hall across the street from Bridgestone Arena, where the SEC men's basketball tournament is underway. We are on the south stage on the second floor until 6 o'clock, so come hang out with us before or after the games. The nightcap starts at 6, Ole Miss versus Texas, and then South Carolina versus Oklahoma at 8:30. Two games have gone final. Kentucky defeats LSU 87-82. Auburn defeats Mississippi State 79-61. So Kentucky faces Missouri tomorrow. Auburn faces Tennessee. The winner, by the way, of Auburn versus Tennessee will take on Vanderbilt Friday afternoon, a 2:30 p.m. Central tip-off. You can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. A lot of reaction to our Predators conversation. The Predators win last night 4-2 in Seattle. 1 point out of the playoffs. The Predators' road trip continues against the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow. Puck drop at the ungodly hour of 9 p.m. Central. Pre-game at 8 right here on 102.5 The Game. Willie is in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Let's get your reaction. 615-737-1025. Mitch says, it's mostly found money if the Predators make the playoffs. I don't think there's much pressure at all. Bill Haslam seemed to scoff at the chances of a rebuild during his news conference when Barry Trotz announced his retirement. Trotz is done after this anyway. One round of playoff revenue is good for the franchise and ownership. It might be hard on the fans to watch them live in mediocrity, but that's where we've been for a long time. It's about Barry ticking another playoff notch on his record and some extra revenue the team didn't really expect to get. Also, I'm a season ticket holder, so I am perpetuating this floundering. Jeff says, interestingly, I gave up my season tickets because of the mediocrity and not the sense of wanting to win. I would be more than willing to buy back in if this team would sell off and try to build something worthwhile. Here you go, Willie. As a Mets fan, I can endure a bleep product on the ice. You can sell me on hope. You can't sell me on stagnant mediocrity.
I'm still waiting for you to tell me the prospect that was traded at the deadline.
By my very quick research, I could not find a prospect who, for example, lived up to who was the prospect who was traded? Cal Ritchie, the prospect who was in the Brock Nelson deal last year. I believe he was the Avalanche's number one prospect. Based on my very, very quick research, I did not find a organization's number one prospect on the move at the deadline.
So I think we have to try to keep that in perspective of what the market was showing for what you could have gotten for Ryan O'Reilly. Now, if your goal was to sink to the bottom, then and have a high pick in the draft, then maybe that just if you did that for that purpose only, in other words, just take whatever picks you could have gotten for O'Reilly, maybe Stamkos, maybe Halla, or whatever, then I guess I see that. But if you trade Ryan O'Reilly, you're setting yourself up for at least, in my opinion, 3 years of not good. You can't replace him. And we've talked so much about the value of having him, the influence he has on the young players that are, by your admission, Adam, are all playing right now. All
yes.
of the prospects that are ready are playing. The next wave, which they still have in the stable, right, that they've been marinating, because guys like Svechkov and LaRue and Evangelista and all the guys, they had eight guys in the lineup that are 24 or under last night. Reed Schaefer would be another one. He scored a big goal last night. Ufko. These are all guys they've been marinating for 3-4 years, right? These are guys that it took that long just to get them ready to where they are now. There's another wave they have with the Brady Martins, the David Edstroms, and we haven't even mentioned the best guy that they have right now. The most interesting story they've got is Matt Wood.
Playing center.
Who's played three great games at center.
That would be big if he pans out as a center. That would be big.
Right. So my point is they've been working on this for about 4 years to get out of the mediocrity. They haven't traded future assets to try to barely get into the playoffs. They've been working on this next core, which Barry Trotz says every week. So it's such a surface take, in my opinion, and it's not a wrong take that, hey, the serve two masters doesn't work. You just stay in the mushy middle. On the surface, I see that, but there's way more to it than that. So they have a big stable of prospects that are just starting to scratch the surface. Two of their best prospects are Brady Martin, who they drafted last year, and Igor Surin, who will be playing in the KHL next year. But they project that he will go right into their lineup in 2 years. So they've got guys coming through the pipeline. It's not like it's empty. They lack one crown jewel. And if they could have gotten a potential crown jewel for O'Reilly, I would have absolutely gone to O'Reilly and said, look, I got a chance to get a Philip Forsberg, a Roman Josi. But as you just admitted, nobody traded that guy at the trade deadline. So if you just want the picks, they could have done that. But in my opinion, they could get the picks next year. for Ryan O'Reilly. They'll get a first rounder for him next year, I would guess, unless he has a really bad injury or something. He's just that important of a player.
I hear everything you're saying, and you are making valid, more than valid arguments. And I understand your point about, and I said this in the lead up to the NHL trade deadline. I said this on Friday with Derek, that I wasn't going to give Ryan O'Reilly away. I wasn't going to trade him just to trade him. But I think you seized on what I've been pounding the table about for quite a long time, the crown jewel. And the Predators have built up their prospect system. They've got all of the draft picks. They have too many draft picks, and we've talked about this.
Right, so why would you trade out Eric Halla for another second or third round pick when you have all these picks?
I hear what you're saying. What I was going to say was...
But he got major criticism for not trading Halla, right?
Yes, he did receive major criticism for not trading Eric Halla. I personally, at the time, didn't understand that either when you were looking at some of the other centers who were being traded, who I think profile similarly to Eric Halla, like Nick Waugh, for example. I believe he went for a first-round pick from Toronto to Colorado.
That stunned me. Toronto is getting skewered for that, by the way.
Yes, well, they've already...
I'm in Canada. I'm hearing it every day. They are crushing.
Well, yeah. The Maple Leafs are having a bad time right now. But I digress. I guess what I'm saying is, and I've said this many, many times, until the Predators get that crown jewel, that Macklin Celebrini type. I have loved watching Macklin Celebrini play for the Sharks this season. He was outstanding for Team Canada at the Olympics, although he did fall short of winning the gold medal because, you know, USA, USA. But I've loved watching him play. And as I was watching him play, I kept saying, boy, I would really love for a player like that to be on the Predators. And I know that Macklin Celebrini's don't come around very often. That's why he's the G word, which is banned on the program. For those who are new to the program, G stands for generational, which I have banned because generational prospect is way too overused. But I digress. I'm sort of playing the percentages here. Like I would be okay, and this is just me, and I live in this world, and I know a lot of you don't. I would be okay sinking to the bottom and trying to find that player. The Predators had that opportunity last season. The NHL draft lottery ping pong balls did not bounce their way, which is a phrase which is touchy around here because of Rangarthon. But the balls actually did not bounce their way. And the Islanders moved up 10 spots and drafted arguably the greatest 18-year-old defenseman to ever play in the NHL, and Matthew Schaefer. So I am willing to take that step back and play the lottery. And I know a lot of you will say it's not a guarantee to get the number one overall pick, but you cannot win if you do not play. So, like, if the Predators make the playoffs, you know I'm going to be watching every game. I'm going to be at every game at Bridgestone Arena. I love playoff hockey. We all love playoff hockey. But I'm tired of the let's make the playoffs and be, you know, defeated by a superior opponent in four or five or six games. So that's where I stand on the deadline, basically, Will.
But that's not the end game goal. Nobody wants to do that every year. But we just got done saying how they've been working on building their prospect pool for about 4 years. It's been since, 2018 that they've traded their first-round pick? So they have been building a prospect pool. They still have all of their future picks. And we just talked about several other prospects that are in the pipeline that aren't ready yet that they will be woven in this. So this is a long-range plan at the moment. And I also think there is something to be said. You also just, I think, contradicted yourself. The Islanders did very similar things last year and won the lottery. So they got their guy when they weren't expecting it. What could happen this year is the Predators, they might fall short. They could slump. Maybe, you know, if they lose a guy or two to injury, which is what Barry Trotz also factored in to the moves he made at the trade deadline. If they lost a couple of key guys who are carrying them or have been carrying them, they could still sink towards the bottom and have a pretty realistic chance of getting a top two or three guy in this draft, because the East is so much better than the West you know, you could finish 5 points out of a playoff spot and still get a top 10 pick. But it's not that unrealistic at all. So I think there is something to be said as well for keeping the winning culture surrounding your prospects with veterans that know how to win, that want to win, where you're not just mailing it in and saying we're going to be bad for a long time. So to do what some people said Barry Trotz should have done would have meant trading seven players. Tell me the last team that traded seven veterans at the trade deadline. I'd like research that, Adam, and see. That's what people were saying. Trade Stamkos, O'Reilly, and Haula, as well as the four guys that they did trade. That would be seven guys off the roster. Name me a team that's traded seven veteran players at the trade deadline. I don't know when the last time that has happened. That's a lot.
But that's a good question.
You've got a culture that you're trying to say the expectation here is to win. Here's how to win. Let me show you how to win. Here's Steven Stamkos, who ripped the team last night after a bad period. You could tell the determination. It was a great interview we had with Lindsey Rally. You could see smoke coming off the top of his head. And they rallied those guys, and they turned the game around. That's a player that knows how to win. And that is a huge influence on Zach LaRue, on Reed Schaefer, on Fedor Svechkov, and the guys that ultimately have to take the torch and go to the next level. You've talked a lot about the Capitals. They have never gone downhill and tried to lose for any period of time.
Not in a long time, at least.
For a year and then coming back. not for a long haul. Boston is a bounce-back team. These are all teams that have expectations to try to win. You got to be smart about it, and you have to draft. You got to get a little lucky sometimes to get the generational player. But just the run-of-the-mill, let's be really bad so that we'll get a good player. That takes a long time, number one, and there's no guarantee that it gets you where you need to go.
615-737-1025. The Predators back in action tomorrow night against Vancouver. Puck drop at 9, pregame at 8, right here on 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us. We'll get back into the Max Crosby, Trey Hendrickson drama. We'll talk about the Titans' approach to free agency so far with our friend Hutton coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.